This episode is brought to you by Pronamel.
Not all our favorite foods and drinks are BFFs with our teeth. Salad dressings, seltzers, and fruits can be enamel enemies. So if you eat or drink those things regularly, your enamel could be at risk. And once it's gone, it's gone.
Pronamel Intensive Enamel Repair penetrates deep into the enamel surface, locking in vital minerals to repair acid-weakened enamel. And with new Pronamel Repair mouthwash, you can enhance that repair beyond just brushing.
Pronamel is the number one dentist-recommended brand for acid erosion, so buy Pronamel Repair anywhere you buy toothpaste or mouthwash. Visit pronamel.com.
Ready? Let's go. Give me a vacation.
Vacation!
Give me a golf course.
70 courses!
Let's get a water sport.
Paddleboarding!
Can I get excursions?
Whale watching!
Time for chill vibes.
Beach yoga!
How about a garden tour?
Balboa Park!
Give me a dolphin. What's that spell?
San Diego!
If you're happy and you know it, San Diego is the place to show it. Book your trip at sandiego.org. Funded in part with the City of San Diego Tourism Marketing District Assessment Funds.
What's up, this your boy Lil Duval, and check out my podcast, Conversations with Unc, on the Black Effect Podcast Network. Each and every Tuesday, Conversations with Unc podcast feature casuals and in-depth talk about ebbs and flows of life and the pursuit of happiness. Unlike my work on stage, I tap into a more serious and sensitive side to give life advice and simply offer words of encouragement, yet remind folks to never forget to laugh. Every Tuesday, listen to Conversations with Unc, hosted by Lil Duval on the Black Effect Podcast Network, iHeartRadio app, or wherever you get your podcasts.
Presented by AT&T. Connecting changes everything.
You know you've got a comeback in you. When you take the next step, you're going to make it count. For your career, for your family, for your life. You can earn a degree you're proud of with Purdue Global. Purdue Global is backed by Purdue University, one of the nation's most respected and innovative public universities. This is your chance. This is your opportunity. This is your comeback. Purdue Global, Purdue's online university for working adults. Start your comeback today at purdueglobal.edu.
Hello, and welcome to Savor, production of iHeartRadio. I'm Annie Reese.
And I'm Lauren Vogelbaum. And today we have an episode for you about ceviche.
Oh, more fun with pronunciation.
Oh, yes. Always, always, always.
Yes, but that is also how I say it. And I do love ceviche. I had so much of it and different kinds of it when I was in Peru.
Ooh.
Oh, it was so good.
Oh, that's wonderful. Yeah, mm-hmm. I adore a ceviche. Growing up in South Florida, it gained popularity there, I think, before it became more widespread elsewhere in many other parts of the United States. So I've been lucky to have, oh yeah, some really good. Oh, now this was a very, very, very craving filled episode for me.
Oh, me as well. I was like, I couldn't remember if I didn't have a place in Atlanta that popped to mind for ceviche, but I was trying to go through and think, where can I get some?
Yeah. I feel like most of mine, I feel like around Atlanta, it's usually either served in like higher end restaurants as an appetizer or in the Spanish tapas places that we've got around town. Neither of which are the types of restaurant that I'm frequenting during this, our pandemic. So
yeah, exactly.
Heavy yes. Sigh.
Heavy sigh indeed.
At any rate, in Peru, June 28th is National Ceviche Day. So we're just about as far off as you can get from that one.
Yeah, pretty much. Perfect. And you can see our past episodes on poke, tuna, other seafood, because a lot of seafood can end up in a ceviche.
Oh, yeah.
Yes, a lot of ingredients in general. So several episodes are probably appropriate for this.
Sure.
Also lime.
Definitely lime. Yes. Yeah.
Yes, yes, yes. But I guess this brings us to our question. Ceviche. What is it?
Well, ceviche is a dish that's most commonly made of seafood that's been chopped small and marinated briefly in citrus juice and seasonings, served room temperature or chilled, and sometimes garnished with or mixed with chopped vegetables and or fruit for texture and flavor. The acidic citrus chemically cooks cooks in scare quotes the seafood, making it firmer than it would be raw. Usually just on the outside, sort of like the chemical equivalent of a sear. Yeah. It's a fresh and bright seafood salad, tart and salty and spicy and with a tender chew. It's invigorating. It's like a little celebration.
Yeah, I agree.
Yeah. And people do all dang kinds of things with ceviche. Any kind of fish or shellfish or crustacean or cephalopod, any kind of marinade incorporating liquids from tomato juice to coconut milk to shrimp broth to pickling brine, any kind of seasonings from hot peppers to garlic to fresh mint or basil to sesame oil. Any kind of garnish from avocado and mango to watermelon and wasabi peas. I've seen a vegetarian version of ceviche made with a base of like mushrooms and carrots and baby corn. Ceviche can be eaten with a fork or scooped up with like a crisp toast or crackers or fried chips of whatever variety you like. But the traditional preparation from northern coastal Peru, and it is originally from there-ish, the traditional preparation is just a white-fleshed saltwater fish, like a corvina or sea bass or sole, marinated in lime juice, seasoned with hot aji or rocoto peppers and salt, and served with shaved onion slices. And there are a lot of regional variations with other ingredients or garnishes or sides, maybe a different type of seafood, maybe a dried versus fresh chilies or different types of chilies. Maybe you marinate the onion too. Maybe you serve it with some seaweed or Peruvian corn or sweet potato, but it tends to be a fairly simple dish. Doing this reading, I got the feeling that this is a whole lot like Hawaiian poke. Like other people do other things with ceviche, but there's this concept of ceviche that is very specific. And everything else is sort of like, well, that's not ceviche, but we're glad you're excited.
Yeah. Yeah. There's a bunch of dishes that are in similar vein. That kind of complicates when I was doing the history bit. I was like, oh, no. I'm sticking to this.
Yeah, absolutely. There's a lot of very passionate and big-hearted argument about what is and is not appropriate to do to ceviche on the internet. I love it. One of the common accompaniments is leche de tigre, milk of the tiger in English, which was traditionally the small glass of the marinade off of the ceviche, but these days is made separately and is often served as an aperitif. Recipes vary, but it's basically alliums, you know, garlic or onions and chilies marinated in fish stock and citrus juice, seasoned with things like a ginger or cilantro, sometimes blended, sometimes strained. Sometimes it's served mixed with a white wine or a clear liquor for an alcoholic cocktail. And because time is a flat circle, sometimes this is now used as a marinade for ceviche.
Whoa.
I know. I love it. It sounds so good. I really want to go make a batch of this like right now.
Yes. Me too.
All these recipes are like, just get 2 cups of lime juice. And I'm like, oh no. I need to make this, but that's a lot of limes.
Okay. Yeah, and I love how many of them started with, talk to your local fishmonger that you trust.
I don't have
one of those. I should, but I don't.
Yeah, it's okay. All right, we're working towards it. Goals.
Yes.
In the meanwhile, let's talk for a minute about that chemical sear, okay? All right. When you cook food, when you apply heat to seafood or you know other animal products, part of what you're doing is modifying the protein molecules in that stuff. You're making them denser and tougher and pushing out water from in and among them. This is why a rare steak is sort of squishy and bloody, but a well-done steak is chewy and drier. Or why a raw egg is liquid, but a scrambled egg is solid, yeah? Mm-hmm. What's happening here is that Okay, so protein molecules are long, bendy, curly things, each consisting of a bunch of atoms that are bonded and folded together in a particular complex structure. When you heat protein molecules up, though, some of those bonds break, unfolding the protein and leaving its atoms free to bond up however's easiest, rather than in their, like, complex, particular, original structure. So they do. They do that. They bond up however's easiest. And this generally results in denser bundles of protein that squeeze water molecules out of the structure of the meat, escaping as juice or steam, and makes the whole structure tougher and more opaque. And the science word for messing with protein molecules like this is denaturing. Yeah.
Mm-hmm.
And the thing is that acidic substances can also denature proteins, break those same bonds, and cause a similar restructuring. With most kinds of seafood chopped into bite-sized pieces and soaked in an acid like lime juice, you can accomplish something like a medium to medium rare texture in 15 to 30 minutes. So fast.
Wow.
So fast. it starts happening immediately. If you let it go longer, like hours up to overnight, you can bring the texture all the way to dry and flaky, sort of what you'd get if you took soaked beef jerky.
Oh, wow.
Yeah, and I was thinking this is what we experienced when we had Lumi Lumi salmon out in Oahu. Lumi Lumi salmon being a side dish of tomato and onion and little salmon bits. And the way that we had it served, anyway, it had been marinating in that for long enough that the salmon got dry and sort of preserved tasting.
Oh, that's interesting.
Yeah, yeah.
Very cool.
Yeah, I know, right? Oh, proteins are so great.
Mm-hmm.
So yeah, it's not technically cooked the way that you would think. I mean, the heating process also will involve some caramelization and Maillard process and things like that. But the acids involved will kill a bunch of the bacteria that cause illness in food. However, as with any seafood, you always want to use good fresh product.
Yes.
Yes.
Yes, yes, yes.
Mm-hmm. Shout out to Render Magazine, by the way. The past few episodes that we've done, I feel like I've found really good science articles in Render. So, yeah, check them out if you have a chance.
Yeah.
Yeah. Ceviche is really easy to make at home as long as you can go to your trusted fishmonger.
I felt like such a failure when I kept reading that. Don't have one.
It's the important thing is to source fresh sashimi-grade seafood. Inland, very frequently what you're going to find, in lack of a good fishmonger, is a frozen fish at supermarkets is frequently sashimi-grade. It'll say on the packaging. So, also, bonus, freezing fish kills off harmful parasites that acid cooking will not kill. So, yay for that part.
Ooh.
Mm-hmm.
Okay.
Mm-hmm.
Okay. Now all hope is not lost.
No. And if you are looking to make it at home, Serious Eats has a really good recipe for it by our very favorite food science writer, J. Kenji Lopez-Alt.
Yes. Oh, yes. I'm going to have to check it out.
Yeah.
All right.
Mm-hmm.
But what about the nutrition?
Well, it depends on how you make it, but ceviche is pretty good for you. Most ceviche is made with leaner types of seafood, so you've got a lot of protein, a punch of good fats, probably some kind of vegetation involved too, so it'll fill you up and help keep you going, both.
Ooh.
Right?
That's kind of rare over here these
right?
days.
Right? Well, we've been doing a lot of, like, desserts lately, but...
That's true. Very true.
Mm-hmm.
We do have some numbers for you.
We do. As of 2012, there were over 2,000 cevicherias in Lima alone. I understand that many of these are only open for lunch, as it's traditionally considered like a daytime food.
Yeah, that's what I read as well. And I'm fairly certain. I'm going to go look back through my food pictures from Peru and make myself hate myself and have all these cravings. But I'm fairly certain most of the ones I had were during the day, for sure.
Oh, fascinating.
Mm-hmm.
There's a couple world records that I dug up. One is from 2019. In that year, 1,000 people from Peru's Institute of Public Higher Education in Naval Technology simultaneously did a ceviche tasting of three types of ceviche each, setting a Guinness record. The three preparations that were offered were different types of fish and different marinades, one with lime, coriander, and chilies and onion, the kind of traditional, one with aji amarillo peppers and lemon, and one with ricotta peppers. The whole thing was in promotion for Peru's bid for UNESCO to declare Peruvian ceviche an intangible cultural heritage of humanity.
Ooh, what a title.
Yeah, I know.
Also, for the record, if anyone needs people to eat a food to accomplish a world record, you know where to find us.
Yeah, call us. We are here.
We are here. We're ready.
Yes. We've been training all our lives for this.
Yes. Yes. I can help you.
I have been eating every day for pretty much ever.
Mm-hmm.
I can do this.
Mm-hmm.
Okay. But here's another one. The Guinness record for the largest seafood ceviche served has been hotly contested between Peru and Mexico over the years.
What?
Hotly contested. For a minute, Peru held the record of 4.1 tons. Then in 2005, Mexico won the title with 4.5 tons. Then in 2008, Peru's volley involved 300 chefs putting together 40,000 servings with 5 tons of fish, 2,500 kilos of limes and onions each, and 250 kilos of chilies and salt each, for a total weight of 6.8 tons. Yes.
Ooh.
that's nearly 15,000 pounds, if that helps you.
That, no.
No.
It's a lot. It's an astounding amount.
It's an astounding amount, yes. The chefs spent all night prepping the fish so that the dish could be composed in about an hour flat and gotten out to everybody. But then Mexico won the record back in 2017 with 11.5 tons.
Holy, not guacamole. My goodness.
Like nearly twice. That much.
Wow.
Yeah. That entry was made of tuna, onions, chilies, cilantro, tomatoes, and lime juice. So that is currently the record holder.
Oh, I guarantee around a table somewhere in Peru.
Oh, yeah.
Some chefs are like, we cannot let this stand.
Oh, it's happening.
Yes. I love it.
Yes. Oh, passion, right? It's just that, it is so fun when people are this excited about food.
Oh. And there has been a lot of passion throughout the history for this dish.
Yes, and we are going to get into that history as soon as we get back from a quick break for a word from our sponsor. This episode is brought to you by Pronamel.
Not all our favorite foods and drinks are BFFs with our teeth. Salad dressings, seltzers, and fruits can be enamel enemies. So if you eat or drink those things regularly, your enamel could be at risk. And once it's gone, it's gone.
Pronamel Intensive Enamel Repair penetrates deep into the enamel surface, locking in vital minerals to repair acid-weakened enamel. And with new Pronamel Repair mouthwash, you can enhance that repair beyond just brushing.
Pronamel is the number one dentist-recommended brand for acid erosion, so buy Pronamel Repair anywhere you buy toothpaste or mouthwash. Visit Pronamel.com.
There's a lot of pros to drinking Health Aid kombucha. No cons that I can think of. Pro, amazing taste. Pro, pairs well with anything. Pro, probiotic. That's a literal pro. And it's deliciously refreshing. It's the perfect pairing to your meal or great on its own, whether you're having Pink Lady Apple, Berry Lemonade, or one of the other great flavors. It's the perfect swap for soda or alcohol. Make it part of your daily routine. Look for the brown bottle with an anchor on it and try Health Aid Kombucha today.
You don't have to hop a plane to see the world. This month's Free This Week picks on Xfinity brings you around the globe. Experience life at a European resort in the hit comedic drama Seaside Hotel from Walter Presents. Watch romance blossom abroad in a Scottish love scheme from Hallmark Movies Channel. Celebrate Earth Month with planet-saving docuseries like Eco-Eye with Duncan Stewart on Magellan TV. And be transported to your happy place with iHeartRadio's Feelin' Good playlist. Just say "free this week" into your Xfinity voice remote.
Today's episode is brought to you by Discover Puerto Rico. We've talked in a bunch of different episodes about facets of Puerto Rican cuisine, like the dish mofongo, made of savory, deep-fried mashed plantains studded with some kind of tasty protein, and the creation of the cool, creamy piña colada. But there is so much more there. I've actually never been. You have a tiny bit of experience, don't you?
Yes. Unfortunately, it was a very tiny bit of experience. I was there for about a day. I'm kicking myself for that now. I remember having delicious rums, delicious drinks, but I want to go back because, yeah, so many episodes we do on here, when we're talking about food from Puerto Rico, I want that.
Mm-hmm.
And it sounds amazing. We're trying to get a savor team trip
together. Oh, absolutely. Well, I mean, we're trying to get a trip to a lot of places, but this is really top of the list. Even putting together this ad read made me hungry. I was like, oh, I want to try those things. Yeah, as we've talked about before, there are influences there from African and Spanish and native Taino foodways. The culinary scene sounds amazing, and we want to go, and I'm hungry. No passport is required for U.S. citizens and permanent residents. You can learn more and plan your trip at discoverpuertorico.com.
And we're back. Thank you, sponsor.
Yes, thank you.
And shout out to start this one. A lot of the information in this history section was collected over several months of traveling by food historian and chef Maricel Precia in her James Beard Award-winning book, Gran Cocina Latina, The Food of Latin America, which I want to read. It sounds so interesting.
Yeah.
Very helpful for compiling this, but also several books about ceviche. So I find that very interesting. Like you
love
said,
it.
Fashion.
Yeah. Yes.
Yes. With that being said, this one can get a bit murky when taking into account similar dishes that exist around the world, as we mentioned, and mm-hmm. theories about how they may or may not have influenced this one.
Mm-hmm.
Also, definitions can get up in there, and we'll talk about that. But ceviche itself is thousands of years old. While we don't have any written records for its first iterations, historians suspect it probably originated in the northwest of Peru, perhaps specifically in a town called Huanchoco, 3,000 years ago, when fishermen would sometimes eat their catch straight from the ocean, though others think the dish originated in Ecuador. And I even saw the Polynesian islands in the mix. People bought it from there. Some historians also believe that the pre-Incan civilization, the Moche, were the first to eat acid-cured raw fish, though some theorize that people were doing this, curing fish with acid, even before that, pointing to archaeological evidence found in an even older civilization where significant amounts of seafood remains and hot pepper seeds have been found in the guts of mummies.
Yes.
This is another mummy sequel. We've already pitched one. Here's another one.
Perfect.
Yes, the mummy franchise must go on.
Clearly. And what better way than with a spicy belly?
What better way indeed? While indigenous South American chiles have been cultivated for around 6,000 years, citrus wouldn't have been a part of the equation for these early ceviches. Some people think it was, but most people doubt it. Bitter oranges and onions were introduced when Columbus arrived in South America in 1492, and lemons and limes followed soon after. Some believe that the ancient cooks, yes, might have used a relative of passion fruit, the tumbo, for this citrus element, but others, including Precia, argue it was too difficult to work with, and they probably just used acidic chili peppers and seaweed instead.
Oh, okay.
Mm-hmm. Depending on who you talk to, though, and the definition you're working off, the origin of ceviche can vary wildly, where people will say, mm-hmm. oh, it was him, it was then,
this was
it
the
was
one.
Here. Exactly. No. Some people argue that ceviche was created by the Incas in the 14th century, who would use available fruit juice and salt and or a fermented beverage called chicha to preserve fresh fish. Others claim it was invented in the 1500s with the arrival of Spanish conquistadors and the ingredients they brought with them. You know, I think it has a long history and many stops along the way.
Yes, many, many ingredients and techniques and layers added over time, sure, with the melding of cultures.
Yes, and speaking of, others point to the 1800s, because beginning in the late 19th century, Japanese folks began immigrating to Peru in substantial numbers, pretty decent numbers. And to this day, the country has one of South America's largest ethnic Japanese populations, a population that, along with Japanese cuisine, would play a major role in this dish's evolution, mm-hmm. especially globally. More on that later. Mm-hmm. Multiple sources seem to indicate that until pretty recently, ceviche was fairly localized. One famous Peruvian chef asserts that ceviche didn't really start getting popular in the capital of Lima until 50 to 60 years ago. Before that, it was viewed as a fisherman's dish, and people mistakenly thought that the lime juice had to cook the fish and would let it marinate for 12 to 24 hours, which really toughened it up. Japanese immigrants familiar with sashimi and raw fish preparations began serving it immediately at their restaurants, which did kind of shift how people saw ceviche.
Yeah, absolutely. And this is when those Japanese immigrants entered the picture. This is when leche de tigre started to shift from being a byproduct of ceviche to its own thing. That shorter marination time meant that you didn't have a bunch of the juices left over from the preparation of it. Oh, yeah, yeah. I never get to say this, but I finally get to say it. According to folklore, leche de tigre is considered an aphrodisiac.
Oh, I feel like we should have balloons for you and confetti. It finally happened for you, Lauren. Well, this day you shall remember.
Yes, yes. It's also apparently considered a hangover cure.
Oh, okay.
Both. Yeah.
Both. Okay. Well, thanks to the West's familiarity with raw fish preparations in Japanese cuisine, they were ready to embrace ceviche when it started making its way around the world in the 20th century. And I think we've talked about this several times, but it's kind of the 80s was the big for the U.S. anyway.
Yeah, a big opening push for that. Yeah.
Yeah, people started eating sushi a lot more. It became more mainstream in this country. The L.A. branch of Japanese restaurant Nobu was one of the first to include ceviche on their menus in North America in 1987. But other sources claim that ceviche, or at least a very similar dish, was appearing on menus in Florida by the 70s. Hmm. So there you go, Lauren. Yeah. According to one article I read, ceviche first started growing popular in the UK in 2011-ish.
And yeah, it was the early 20-teens here in the U.S. too, I think. From 2009 to 2013, ceviche began appearing on 26% more restaurant menus. And right at the time, sushi was also really picking up. Raw oysters were getting more national attention. In an article from 2013 in Nation's Restaurant News, which is a great publication, Chef Andrea Carbine, I'm not sure if I'm saying her name correctly, she called ceviche a gateway food into the raw bar world.
I love that.
Yeah, yeah. And I think it is, right, because, you know, like purely raw fish might be a little bit intimidating to some people, but yeah, it's not. The texture isn't that different from cooked fish, or like at least like a good like medium rare tuna steak or something like that. So,
mm-hmm.
And depending on how it's made, but yeah.
Yeah. And this sounds really silly and probably some chefs hate this, but I think the like crisp or the chips aspect, like some people that like they're cool with that. And they're like, okay, I'll try this because I got the chip.
Yeah, 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 yeah. So. I am comforted by the fact that there is a tortilla chip involved. Put anything yes. on a tortilla chip. I am likely to try it because I want the crunch.
Yes.
And the fry of that chip. So mm-hmm. if it happens to be acid-cooked fish, then fine. That's all right.
I could be wrong, but I do suspect for some people, they're like, okay,
yeah.
chip situation, I can try this.
Yeah. I was just reading all of these different preparation notes that were involving things like homemade plantain or
yeah.
yuca chips or things like that. And I was like, oh, I need to eat this right now.
Yeah. Yes, agreed. I love how we so often end these episodes in this state.
Yeah.
How am I going to get this?
And then, right. And then people kept talking about passion fruit, and passion fruit is like my favorite thing. And I'm fine.
Definitely.
It's also real. It's also really tying back into my scallops craving, because scallop is a pretty frequent ingredient in like modern multicultural ceviche. So,
yeah. Yeah. I was thinking about that too. I was thinking about that too. Well,
heavy sigh
indeed. We should stop now. I guess that's what I have to say about ceviche at this current juncture. But we do have some listener mail for you.
We do, and we will get into that after one more quick break for a word from our sponsor. This episode is brought to you by Pronamel.
Not all our favorite foods and drinks are BFFs with our teeth. Salad dressings, seltzers, and fruits can be enamel enemies. So if you eat or drink those things regularly, your enamel could be at risk. And once it's gone, it's gone.
Pronamel Intensive Enamel Repair penetrates deep into the enamel surface, locking in vital minerals to repair acid-weakened enamel. And with new Pronamel Repair mouthwash, you can enhance that repair beyond just brushing.
Pronamel is the number one dentist-recommended brand for acid erosion, so buy Pronamel Repair anywhere you buy toothpaste or mouthwash. Visit pronamel.com.
There's a lot of pros to drinking Health Aid kombucha. No cons that I can think of. Pro, amazing taste. Pro, pairs well with anything. Pro, probiotic. That's a literal pro. And it's deliciously refreshing. It's the perfect pairing to your meal or great on its own, whether you're having Pink Lady Apple, Berry Lemonade, or one of the other great flavors. It's the perfect swap for soda or alcohol. Make it part of your daily routine. Look for the brown bottle with an anchor on it and try Health Aid Kombucha today.
You don't have to hop a plane to see the world. This month's Free This Week picks on Xfinity brings you around the globe. Experience life at a European resort in the hit comedic drama Seaside Hotel from Walter Presents. Watch romance blossom abroad in a Scottish love scheme from Hallmark Movies Channel. Celebrate Earth Month with planet-saving docuseries like EcoEye with Duncan Stewart on Magellan TV. And be transported to your happy place with iHeartRadio's Feelin' Good playlist. Just say Free This Week into your Xfinity voice remote.
Today's episode is brought to you by Discover Puerto Rico.
We've talked in a bunch of different episodes about facets of Puerto Rican cuisine, like the dish mofongo, made of savory, deep-fried mashed plantains studded with some kind of tasty protein, and the creation of the cool, creamy piña colada. But there is so much more there. I've actually never been. You have a tiny bit of experience, don't you?
Yes. Unfortunately, it was a very tiny bit of experience. I was there for about a day. I'm kicking myself for that now. I remember having delicious rums, delicious drinks, but I want to go back because, yeah, so many episodes we do on here, when we're talking about food from Puerto Rico, I want that.
Mm-hmm.
And it sounds amazing. We're trying to get a savor team trip together.
Oh, absolutely. Well, I mean, we're trying to get a trip to a lot of places, but this is really top of the list. Even putting together this ad read made me hungry. I was like, oh, I want to try those things. Yeah, as we've talked about before, there are influences there from African and Spanish and native Taino foodways. The culinary scene sounds amazing, and we want to go, and I'm hungry. No passport is required for U.S. citizens and permanent residents. You can learn more and plan your trip at discoverpuertorico.com.
And we're back. Thank you, sponsor.
Yes, thank you.
And we're back with a listener mail. Invigorating.
Yes.
Yes. I was telling Lauren there's a plant in here now in my studio, and it's quite the long story, and I won't bore you with it, although it's pretty funny. But I have to be careful with my hand gestures now.
Oh.
It's kind of right behind me. Maybe I should move it.
Yeah, maybe. Yeah, you apparently just keep getting like a handful of plant and it keeps startling you.
It does.
See above, Annie is very easily startled. And
yes, but that was a very gesture-filled listener mail jingle.
It was. So. It was. Most of them are, but.
Yeah. Yeah, I'm just going to have to keep this in mind.
Yeah.
Anyway, Lauren and Chad wrote, "My husband, who is your biggest fan, and I are listening to the marzipan episode, and I was transported back in time to a very specific experience with marzipan. When I was 9, my family lived in Norway, and I remember marzipan being a common addition to many cakes and treats. For Christmas, a family friend gave me and my sister, who was four, each a marzipan pig, just plain marzipan, nothing else added to it in the shape of a pig. I'm guessing it was at least a quarter of a pound of marzipan each, which we ate in one sitting. Needless to say, our experience with marzipan was significantly altered after this overindulgence to the point that we actively would run away from it for the next few years. I think we've both finally come to terms with the fact that it is a good addition to many treats, but I don't think either of us will ever be able to eat it on its own again. Oof. That's quite a lot.
That is a lot, especially for, I mean, that would be a lot for a full-grown adult, let alone a tiny child. So.
Yes. I'm glad you've kind of been able to accept it in some places, at least.
Yes, that's good, because, right.
Mm-hmm. As someone who has, I've told the story before, but I definitely went ate way too much chocolate once, and I paid the price. But I'm very glad I'm still able to eat chocolate.
Me too. Oh, that would be a tragedy.
Mm-hmm, mm-hmm. Also, Lauren and Chad came to Atlanta recently, and they had a great time. So.
Yay! Yeah. Oh, I'm so glad that you had a good time here. Yeah. Mm-hmm. We can be a hospitable city.
We can be. We try. Me and Lauren, always down to give some advice, tips.
Oh, yeah. If y'all are ever coming into town, let us know. Annie has an extremely well-filled out food map of where to go and what to eat.
Yes.
I mean, honestly, for a lot of cities, not just Atlanta, but...
Yes, Atlanta's probably the biggest.
Yeah.
Yes, and I think that was a very kind way to put my map situation. So I appreciate that, Lauren.
It is a whole situation.
Mm-hmm.
Claire wrote and sent us a recipe for crepes. I've been making crepes since I was very young, and it really is easy peasy lemon squeezy. That's a crepe pun, since butter and sugar and a squeeze of lemon juice is my favorite crepe topping combo. I'm half French, and my dad and grandma taught me to make crepes. For us, it wasn't really associated with the holidays, just a nice weekend breakfast when we were in the mood for a slow morning, as Annie so aptly calls them. My family recipe is one of those that doesn't have real measurements. Everything is done au pif, did you say, Annie? Yeah?
Au pif?
Mm-hmm. As we would say in French, it means by the nose or intuitively. I'm including it below. It really is super easy. As a half-French kid who grew up in mostly the States, I would often make crepes the morning after sleepovers at friends' houses in middle and high school, much to the delight of my pals and their parents. A note on toppings. In France, at least in my family and at crepe stands I've been to, the simple toppings tend to rule for sweet crepes, butter and sugar with some lemon, Nutella, or jam. I feel like crepes loaded with tons of fruit and topped with whipped cream are more of an American contribution, but I may be wrong on that. It's purely based on my own observations. Funny anecdote about maple syrup on crepes. My family and I lived in Montreal for a time before landing in the States. My dad still lives there, and as you can imagine, maple syrup is a big part of life in Quebec. We really enjoy it on crepes. As a kid, I didn't realize that maple syrup was not ubiquitous in France. When I was about 10 or 11, I completely befuddled the person running the crepe stand at a small community pool in the rural Alps when I tried to order a crepe with maple syrup. Also, another note on pronunciation. I don't think Lauren needs to feel bad at all about saying crepes in the American way on that phone call, even though a French person happened to be present. In my mind, it would be pretty outrageous to expect people who speak completely different languages to pronounce things the same way a native speaker would, especially when a word that has been fully adopted into the English language and has kind of become its own thing. As someone who is bilingual and could say crepes with a French accent, I still say it in the American way if I'm talking with English speakers, and in the French way if I'm actually speaking French, one in Rome and all that.
Oh, I love that. And that's very kind of you to
yes,
say.
Thank you.
And I do think that makes sense because, I mean, obviously this is a huge conversation. This is a food show. But French as a language is very, like, the sound doesn't stop. It's the whole key.
Yeah.
So I can see how, like, if you're in the flow and it that's just how you're saying it, whereas English has kind of our starts and stops and, yeah, things like that.
Yeah. And it is right. It's different, slightly different inflections and different common vowels. And so, right, sure. It totally, I mean, I don't know, like in this ceviche episode, I felt really, when I pronounced, what did I, and Milk of the Tiger, when I said, mm-hmm. when I said it with that rolled R at the end, I felt immediately really goofy because I'm like, am I really overpronouncing this? But then I was like, I don't know, it's kind of, it's a very strange and interesting conversation that certainly is larger than this episode.
Yes. But we do appreciate that. And also all of the recipe.
Yes.
All of these crepe bags.
Thank
you. Stories. Mm-hmm. I do love that you asked for maple syrup.
And they were like, the heck is maple syrup?
Who like, are you?
What are you talking about, you strange child?
That's fantastic. So thanks to both of those listeners for writing in. If you would like to write to us, you can. Our email is hello@saverpod.com.
We are also on social media. You can find us on Twitter, Facebook, and Instagram @SaverPod. And we do hope to hear from you. Saver is a production of iHeartRadio. For more podcasts from iHeartRadio, you can visit the iHeartRadio app, Apple Podcasts, or wherever you listen to your favorite shows. Thanks, as always, to our super producers, Dylan Fagan and Andrew Howard. Thanks to you for listening. And we hope that lots more good things are coming your way. This episode is brought to you by Pronamel.
Not all our favorite foods and drinks are BFFs with our teeth. Salad dressings, seltzers, and fruits can be enamel enemies. So if you eat or drink those things regularly, your enamel could be at risk. And once it's gone, it's gone.
Pronamel Intensive Enamel Repair penetrates deep into the enamel surface, locking in vital minerals to repair acid-weakened enamel. And with new Pronamel Repair mouthwash, you can enhance that repair beyond just brushing.
Pronamel is the number one dentist-recommended brand for acid erosion, so buy Pronamel Repair anywhere you buy toothpaste or mouthwash. Visit Pronamel.com.
Today's episode is brought to you by Discover Puerto Rico.
Puerto Rico is home to a thriving culinary scene based on products and traditions from the native Taino, African, and Spanish peoples that have influenced it.
When you go, there are a host of restaurants, bars, breweries, distilleries, farms, and coffee houses to dig into, from five-star experiences to local favorites.
No passport required for U.S. citizens and permanent residents. Learn more and plan your trip at discoverpuertorico.com.
There's two kinds of people in the world, people who love Health Aid kombucha and people who have never tried it. The bubbly mix of probiotic tea and refreshing juice is delicious and good for your gut health with great flavors to choose from that you can't help but love. If you've never tried it before, maybe try a bottle or can of passion fruit tangerine or ginger lemon. Your taste buds and your gut will thank you. Look for the brown bottle with an anchor on it and try Health Aid kombucha today.
Health Aid kombucha.
You don't have to hop a plane to see the world. This month's Free This Week picks on Xfinity brings you around the globe. Experience life at a European resort in the hit comedic drama Seaside Hotel from Walter Presents. Watch romance blossom abroad in a Scottish love scheme from Hallmark Movies Channel. Celebrate Earth Month with planet-saving docuseries like EcoEye with Duncan Stewart on Magellan TV. And be transported to your happy place with iHeartRadio's Feeling Good playlist. Just say Free This Week into your Xfinity voice remote.